Even before he had met Duffy, Timmons had pretty well figured out for himself how the drugs were moved and why. There had been briefings in Washington, of course, before they sent him to Asuncion, but that had been pretty much second or third-hand information. And he had been briefed when he got to the embassy in Asuncion, although he'd come away from those briefings with the idea that Rule 1 in the suppression of the drug trade was, "We're guests in Paraguay, so don't piss off the locals." It hadn't taken Timmons long to understand what was going on. Paraguay was bordered by Brazil, Bolivia, and Argentina. The drugs came from Bolivia, where the cultivation of the cocoa plant was as common as the cultivation of corn in Kansas. It was refined into cocaine in Bolivia. Some of the refined product went to Brazil, where some was consumed and some exported. Most of it went to, actually, through Paraguay to Argentina. Although there was a substantial and growing market for cocaine in Argentina, this explained Liam Duffy's interest, most of the cocaine simply changed hands in Argentina. The coke then was exported by its new owners through the port of Buenos Aires, near downtown, and the international airport Ezeiza, some 20 kilometers to the southwest, the bulk of it going to the United States, but a good deal to Europe, and some even to Australia. There were some imaginative ways of moving the cocaine, a crystal and powder, across borders. These ranged from packing it in caskets, or body cavities, of the deceased being returned home for burial, to putting an ounce or more in a latex condom, which was then tied, swallowed by a human smuggler or mule, and either regurgitated or defecated once across the border. Unless, of course, one or more of the condoms were to rupture en route, which they often did, causing the mule severe toxicity, then death. Most of the drug, however, was commonly packed in plastic bags, 1 kilogram, 2.2 pounds, of cocaine to a package. These sometimes were not concealed or disguised at all, if the shippers were confident the customs officials at the border had been adequately bribed, or the kilo bags were hidden in myriad ways, in the tires of cars or trucks, for example, or packed in a crate with something legitimate. Operative word, myriad. The only way to interdict a worthwhile shipment was to know when it was to be made and or the method of shipment. For example, that 100 kilos of cocaine were to be concealed in the spare tires of a Scandia 18-wheeler of the Jorge Manso e Hijos truck line carrying bagged soybeans, which would cross the border at a certain crossing on a certain date. This information could be obtained most commonly in one of two ways. It could be bought. The trouble here was that the U.S. government was reluctant to come up with enough money for this purpose and did so only rarely. The Paraguayan government came up with no money for such a purpose. Sometimes, however, there was money as the result of a successful interdiction. Any money over a reasonable expectation of a truck driver's expenses was considered to be as much contraband as any cocaine found, and this was used. The most common source of information, however, was to take someone who had been apprehended moving drugs and turn him into a snitch. The wheels of justice in Paraguay set a world standard for slow grinding. Getting arraigned might take upward of a year. The wait for a trial was usually a period longer than that. But when the sentence finally came down, it was pretty stiff. Paraguay wanted the world to know it was doing its part in the war on the trafficking of illegal drugs. The people who owned the cocaine, who arranged its transport through Paraguay into Argentina, and who profited the most from the business, as a rule, never rode in the trucks or in the light aircraft that moved it over the border. Thus, they didn't get arrested. The most they ever lost was the shipment itself, and maybe the transport vehicle. So basically, not much, considering that the cocaine, worth a fortune in Miami or Buenos Aires or London or Brisbane, was a cheap commodity until it actually got across the Argentine border. What really burned the bad guys, far better than grabbing 100 kilos of cocaine every week, was grabbing the cash after the Argentine dealers paid for it in Argentina. Even better, grabbing the cocaine and the money. That really stung the bastards. Timmons and Duffy were working on this. Step one was to find out how and when a shipment would be made. Snitches gave Timmons this information. Step two was to pass it to Duffy. The Gendarmería Nacional had authority all over Argentina. They could show up at a Policía Federal roadblock and make sure the Federals did their job. Or they could set up their own roadblocks to grab the cocaine and/or turn the couriers into snitches. With a little bit of luck, Timmons and Duffy believed, they could track the cocaine until it changed hands, then grab both the merchandise and the money the dealers in Argentina were using to pay for it. The problem Timmons had with this was getting the information from the snitches to Duffy without anyone hearing about it. It wasn't much of a secret that the bad guys had taps on both Timmons's and Duffy's telephones. The only way for Timmons to get the information to Duffy without it being compromised, and in time for Duffy to be able to use it, was to personally take it to him. Which, again, explained why Timmons was heartsick when he saw the highway police roadblock on the road to the airport. The information he had gathered with so much effort would be useless unless he could get it to Duffy in Buenos Aires tonight. If he missed his flight, the next wasn't until tomorrow morning. Before that plane left, the Scandia 18-wheeler of the Jorge Manso y Hijos truck line, Argentine license plate number DSD6774, which had 200 1-kilo bags of cocaine concealed in bags of soybeans on the second pallet from the top, center row, rear, would be lined up to get on the ferry that would carry it across the Rio Paraguay, the border, to Formosa. And all Timmons's work over the last 17 days would be down the toilet. What was particularly grating to Timmons was that he knew the moment a highway policeman saw the diplomatic plates on his embassy Chevrolet Trailblazer, the vehicle would be waved through the roadblock. The highway police had no authority to stop a car with CD plates, and no authority of any kind over an accredited diplomat. The problem was to actually get up to the highway policeman. That had taken a long time, almost 20 precious minutes. But the line of vehicles moved so that finally the Trailblazer had worked its way to where the Peugeot van sat with its door open. The embassy vehicle with CD plates, however, didn't get waved through. Instead, two highway policemen approached. "Shit," Timmons said. Cesar remained silent behind the wheel. Timmons angrily took both his diplomatic passport and his diplomatic carnet, a driver's license-size plastic-sealed card issued by the Paraguayan Foreign Ministry identifying him as an accredited diplomat, and hurriedly held them out the window. "Diplomat! Diplomat!" he said impatiently. "Please step out of the car, senor," one of the highway policemen said. "Didn't you hear what I said?" Timmons demanded. Waving his diplomatic credentials, he added, "Don't you know what these are?" "Step out of the car, please, senor." One of the highway policemen now pointed the muzzle of his submachine gun at Timmons. Timmons told himself not to lose his temper. He got out of the Trailblazer. "Please take me to your officer," he said politely. The muzzle of the submachine gun now directed him to the open door of the panel van. He went to it. He ducked his head to get inside, and as he entered the van, he suddenly had the sensation of what felt like a bee sting in his buttocks. Then everything went black. One of the highway policemen pushed his body all the way into the van, and the door closed. The other highway policeman ordered Timmons's driver out from behind the wheel, handcuffed him, then forced him into the back seat. Then he got behind the wheel and drove off toward the airport. The Peugeot panel van followed.